Hello, patrons, and welcome back to Dracula by Bram Stoker. Before we begin this episode, which is the second part of Chapter 6, there's a couple of notes from the appendices at the back of the Penguin edition. Dr. Seward makes a couple of medical references. He talks about Burden Sanderson's physiology and Ferrier's brain knowledge. Sir John Scott Burden Sanderson, 1828 to 1905, was a physiologist who, along with J.R. Page, first measured the electrical output of the heart. And James Frederick Ferrier, 1808 to 64, was a Scottish metaphysician. Later on, in her diary, Mina uses a word, brool, B-R-O-O-L, and that is a deep, murmuring sound, a brool. And she also says, la la la, men like trees walking. This is a biblical reference, Mark 8, 24. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. So there you are. I don't know whether you enjoy these little appendices to help you understand the text or enjoy the text more. I don't know. But, you know, I put them in for those of you who do, because I'm sure some of you do. Anyway, on with the show. Dracula Episode 9, Chapter 6, Part 2. We begin with Dr. Seward's diary before jumping again once more into Mina's diary. I hope you enjoy it.
Dracula by Bram Stoker. Read by Mike Bennett.
Episode 9. Dr. Seward's Diary, 5th of June. The case of Renfield grows more interesting the more I get to understand the man. He has certain qualities, very largely developed. Selfishness, secrecy, and purpose. I wish I could get at what is the object of the latter. He seems to have some settled scheme of his own, but what it is, I do not yet know. His redeeming quality is a love of animals, though indeed he has such curious turns in it that I sometimes imagine he is only abnormally cruel. His pets are of odd sorts. Just now his hobby is catching flies. He has at present such a quantity that I have had myself to expostulate. To my astonishment, he did not break out into a fury as I expected, but took the matter in simple seriousness. He thought for a moment, and then said, "May I have 3 days? I shall clear them away." Of course, I said that would do. I must watch him. 18th of June. He has turned his mind now to spiders, and has got several very big fellows in a box. He keeps feeding them with his flies, and the number of the latter is becoming sensibly diminished, although he has used half his food in attracting more flies from outside to his room. 1st of July. His spiders are now becoming as great a nuisance as his flies, and today I told him that he must get rid of them. He looked very sad at this, so I said that he must clear out some of them at all events. He cheerfully acquiesced in this, and I gave him the same time as before for reduction. He disgusted me much while with him, for when a horrid blowfly, bloated with some carrion food, buzzed into the room, he caught it, held it exultantly for a few moments between his finger and thumb, and before I knew what he was going to do, put it in his mouth and ate it. I scolded him for it, but he argued quietly that it was very good and very wholesome, that it was life, strong life, and gave life to him. This gave me an idea, or the rudiment of one. I must now watch how he gets rid of his spiders. He has evidently some deep problem in his mind, for he keeps a little notebook in which he is always jotting down something. Whole pages of it are filled with masses of figures, generally single numbers added up in batches, and then the totals added in batches again, as though he were focusing some account, as the auditors put it. 8th of July. There is a method in his madness, and the rudimentary idea in my mind is growing. It will be a whole idea soon, and then, Oh, unconscious celebration. You will have to give the wall to your conscious brother. I kept away from my friend for a few days so that I might notice if there were any change. Things remain as they were, except that he has parted with some of his pets and got a new one. He has managed to get a sparrow, and has already partially tamed it. His means of taming is simple, for already the spiders have diminished. Those that do remain, however, are well fed, for he still brings in the flies by tempting them with his food. 19th of July. We are progressing. My friend has now a whole colony of sparrows, and his flies and spiders are almost obliterated. When I came in, he ran to me and said he wanted to ask me a great favour, a very, very great favour. And as he spoke, he fawned on me like a dog. I asked him what it was, and he said, with a sort of rapture in his voice and bearing, "A kitten, a nice little sleek, playful kitten that I can play with and teach and feed and feed and feed." I was not unprepared for this request, for I had noticed how his pets went on increasing in size and vivacity, but I did not care that his pretty family of tame sparrows should be wiped out in the same manner as the flies and the spiders, so I said I would see about it, and asked him if he would not rather have a cat than a kitten. His eagerness betrayed him as he answered, "Oh, yes, I would like a cat. I only asked for a kitten, lest you should refuse me a cat. No one would refuse me a kitten, would they?" I shook my head and said that at present I feared it would not be possible, but that I would see about it. His face fell, and I could see a warning of danger in it, for there was a sudden, fierce, sidelong look which meant killing. The man is an undeveloped homicidal maniac. I shall test him with his present craving and see how it will work out. Then I shall know more. 10 p.m. I have visited him again and found him sitting in a corner, brooding. When I came in, he threw himself on his knees before me and implored me to let him have a cat, that his salvation depended upon it. I was firm, however, and told him that he could not have it. Whereupon he went, without a word, and sat down, gnawing his fingers in the corner where I had found him. I shall see him in the morning, early. 20th of July. Visited Renfield very early, before the attendant went his rounds. Found him up and humming a tune. He was spreading out his sugar, which he had saved, in the window, and was manifestly beginning his fly-catching again. And beginning it cheerfully and with good grace, I looked around for his birds, and not seeing them, asked him where they were. He replied, without turning round, that they had all flown away. There were a few feathers about the room, and on his pillow a drop of blood. I said nothing, but went and told the keeper to report to me if there were anything odd about him during the day. 11 a.m. The attendant has just been to me to say that Renfield has been very sick and has disgorged a whole lot of feathers. "My belief is, doctor," he said, "that he has eaten his birds and that he just took and ate them raw." 11 p.m. I gave Renfield a strong opiate tonight, enough to make even him sleep, and took away his pocketbook to look at it. The thought that has been buzzing about my brain lately is complete, and the theory proved. My homicidal maniac is of a peculiar kind. I shall have to invent a new classification for him and call him a zoophagous, life-eating maniac. What he desires is to absorb as many lives as he can, and he has laid himself out to achieve it in a cumulative way. He gave many flies to one spider, and many spiders to one bird, and then wanted a cat to eat the many birds. What would have been his later steps? It would almost be worthwhile to complete the experiment. It might be done if there were only a sufficient cause. Men sneered at vivisection, and yet look at its results today. Why not advance science in its most difficult and vital aspect? The knowledge of the brain.
Had I even the secret of one such mind? Did I hold the key to the fancy of even one lunatic? I might advance my own branch of science to a pitch compared with which Burden Sanderson's physiology or Ferrier's brain knowledge would be as nothing. If only there were a sufficient cause. I must not think too much of this, or I may be tempted. A good cause might turn the scale with me, for may not I too be of an exceptional brain congenitally? How well the man reasoned! Lunatics always do within their own scope. I wonder at how many lives he values a man, or if at only one. He has closed the account most accurately, and today begun a new record. How many of us begin a new record with each day of our lives? To me, it seems only yesterday that my whole life ended with my new hope, and that truly I began a new record. So it will be until the great recorder sums me up and closes my ledger account with a balanced profit or loss. Oh, Lucy, Lucy, I cannot be angry with you, nor can I be angry with my friend, whose happiness is yours. But I must only wait on hopeless and work. Work, work. If I only could have as strong a cause as my poor mad friend there, a good, unselfish cause to make me work, that would be indeed happiness. Mina Murray's Journal, 26th July. I am anxious, and it soothes me to express myself here. It is like whispering to oneself and listening at the same time, and there is also something about the shorthand symbols that makes it different from writing. I am unhappy about Lucy and about Jonathan. I have not heard from Jonathan for some time, and was very concerned. But yesterday, dear Mr. Hawkins, who is always so kind, sent me a letter from him. I had written, asking him if he had heard, and he said that the enclosed had just been received. It is only a line, dated from Castle Dracula, and says that he is just starting for home. That is not like Jonathan. I do not understand it, and it makes me uneasy. Then, too, Lucy, although she is so well, has lately taken to her old habit of walking in her sleep. Her mother has spoken to me about it, and we have decided that I am to lock the door of our room every night. Mrs. Westenra has got an idea that sleepwalkers always go out on roofs of houses and along the edges of cliffs and then get suddenly wakened and fall over with a despairing cry that echoes all over the place. Poor dear. She is naturally anxious about Lucy, and she tells me that her husband, Lucy's father, had the same habit, that he would get up in the night and dress himself and go out if he were not stopped. Lucy is to be married in the autumn, and she is already planning out her dresses and how her house is to be arranged. I sympathize with her, for I do the same, only Jonathan and I will start in life in a very simple way, and shall have to try to make both ends meet. Mr. Holmwood, he is the Honourable Arthur Holmwood, only son of Lord Godalming, is coming up here very shortly, as soon as he can leave town, for his father is not very well, and I think dear Lucy is counting the moments till he comes. She wants to take him up to the seat on the churchyard cliff and show him the beauty of Whitby. I dare say it is the waiting which disturbs her. She will be all right when he arrives. 27th of July. No news from Jonathan. I am getting quite uneasy about him, though why I should I do not know, but I do wish that he would write. If it were only a single line. Lucy walks more than ever, and each night I am awakened by her moving about the room. Fortunately, the weather is so hot that she cannot get cold, but still, the anxiety and the perpetually being wakened is beginning to tell on me, and I am getting nervous and wakeful myself. Thank God Lucy's health keeps up. Mr. Holmwood has been suddenly called to ring to see his father, who has been taken seriously ill, Lucy frets at the postponement of seeing him, but it does not touch her looks. She is a trifle stouter, and her cheeks are a lovely rose pink. She has lost that anemic look which she had. I pray it will last. 3rd of August. Another week gone, and no news from Jonathan, not even to Mr. Hawkins, from whom I have heard. Oh, I do hope he is not ill. He surely would have written. I look at that last letter of his, but somehow it does not satisfy me. It does not read like him, and yet it is his writing. There is no mistake of that. Lucy has not walked much in her sleep the last week, but there is an odd concentration about her which I do not understand. Even in her sleep she seems to be watching me. She tries the door, and finding it locked, goes about the room searching for the key. 6th of August. Another 3 days, and no news. This suspense is getting dreadful. If I only knew where to write to, or where to go, I should feel easier. But no one has heard a word of Jonathan since that last letter. I must pray to God for patience. Lucy is more excitable than ever, but is otherwise well. Last night she was very threatening, and the fishermen say that we are in for a storm. I must try to watch it and learn the weather signs. Today is a grey day, and the sun, as I write, is hidden in thick clouds high over Kettleness. Everything is grey, except the green grass, which seems like an emerald amongst it. Grey, earthy rock, grey clouds tinged with the sunburst at the far edge hang over the grey sea, into which the sand points stretch like grey fingers. The sea is tumbling in over the shallows and the sandy flats with a roar, muffled in the sea mists drifting inland. The horizon is lost in a grey mist. All is vastness. The clouds are piled up like giant rocks, and there is a brool over the sea that sounds like some presage of doom. Dark figures are on the beach here and there, sometimes half shrouded in the mist, and seem men like trees walking. The fishing boats are racing for home and rise and dip in the groundswell as they sweep into the harbour, bending to the scuppers. Here comes old Mr. Swales. He is making straight for me, and I can see by the way he lifts his hat that he wants to talk. I have been quite touched by the change in the poor old man. When he sat down beside me, he said, in a very gentle way,
"I want to say something to you, miss."
I could see he was not at ease, so I took his poor old wrinkled hand in mine and asked him to speak fully. So he said, leaving his hand in mine,
"I'm afraid, my dearie, that I must have shocked you by all the wicked things I've been saying about the dead and such like for weeks past, but I didn't mean them, and I want you to remember that when I'm gone. We old folks that be daffled with one foot abaft the croak hall don't altogether like to think of it, and we don't want to feel scart of it, and that's why I've took to making light of it, so that I'd cheer up me own heart a bit. But Lord love you, miss, I ain't afraid of dying, not a bit, only I don't want to die if I can help it. My time must be nigh at hand now, for I be old, and 100 years is too much for any man to expect, and I'm so nigh it that the old man is already wetting his scythe. You see, I can't get out of the habit of caffing about it all at once. The chaffs will wag as they be used to. Some day soon the angel of death will sound his trumpet for me, but don't ye do all and greet me, dearie."
For he saw that I was crying.
"If he should come this very night, I'd not refuse to answer his call, for life be, after all, only a waiting for something else than what we're doing, and death be all that we can rightly depend on. But I'm content, for it's coming to me, my dearie, and coming quick. It may be coming while we're looking and wondering. Maybe it's in that wind out over the sea that's bringing with it loss and wreck and sore distress and sad hearts. Look, look," he cried suddenly, "there's something in that wind and in the host beyond that sounds and looks and tastes and smells like death. It's in the air. I feel it coming. Lord, make me answer cheerful when my call comes.
He held up his arms devoutly and raised his hat. His mouth moved as though he were praying. After a few minutes' silence, he got up, shook hands with me and blessed me, and said goodbye and hobbled off. It all touched me and upset me very much. I was glad when the Coast Guard came along with his spyglass under his arm. He stopped to talk to me as he always does, but all the time kept looking at a strange ship.
"I can't make her out," he said. "She's Russian by the look of her, but she's knocking about in the queerest way. She doesn't know her mind a bit. She seems to see the storm coming, but can't decide whether to run up north in the open or to put in here. Look there again. She is steered mighty strangely, for she doesn't mind the hand on the wheel. Changes about with every puff of wind. We'll hear more of her before this time tomorrow."
The music on the podcast is by David Beard. Visit his site at davidbeardmusic.com.
Oh yes, listeners, we'll be hearing more of her, all right. In the next episode of Dracula, we'll learn all about that ship and its uncanny journey. Of course, if you've seen the films, it needs no introduction. But in case you haven't, well, I'll say no more. Until next time. I'll be back in your ears very soon with some new content. I'm not quite sure what the new content's going to be, but I want to start producing more regular podcasts, less kind of structured. Do you know what I mean? It's like Underwood and Finch, Dracula, nothing in between. I want to kind of do something different. I don't know what, maybe just sort of short chit-chat podcasts, insights into things in my world, you know, what's in my fridge, etc., etc. And After the Plague 2, which is something I've been meaning to write and haven't started yet, but I think, well, what the hell, you know, just get on with it, write some kind of Pulp Fiction thing and just, you know, start pumping that out. So, lots to look forward to, I hope. Have a lovely day then, listeners. Thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you again very soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, P.S. Underwood and Finch Underground episode 23 is almost finished in the writing and editing, and, well, I'm going to try and record it and edit it and get it up online before the end of the month. I mean this month, November. Yes, that means the next few days.
Oh my God, that's just like so totally awesome.
Yes, isn't it?
This podcast has been brought to you today by you. Yes, you. And all my other sponsors at Patreon. Thank you for supporting me, and never forget that everything I produce from now on, be it on paper or on podcast, is as a result of your contribution.
Yeah! Woo! Woo, yeah!
I did a mini fist pump there, but obviously you couldn't see it.